Good morning. It is 7:47 here on the Mighty 690. It's time for our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres. And we have in studio James Coover from K-State Extension's Wildcat District. Good morning, James. How's it going?
Good morning. Doing good.
All right. Very good. So here we are. I was just looking at some of those corn numbers. Probably Southeast Kansas at this point past 70% harvested here. So leading the state, interestingly enough, the last crop progress report, the statewide average was only at 8%, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah. Yeah. Up north, I mean, they're just now starting to harvest up north. And of course, they actually had rain to delay them. Here, we're mostly just dragging along slowly because there's not really any rain in the forecast. There's no reason to hurry. But yeah, I'd say 70% is probably on the low end. It looks like most of the corn's in by now.
But yeah, no, that's kind of the way I felt. That's just what sometimes those numbers are a little bit behind. But it's just a dry and dusty time in the fields right now.
Oh yeah, it's really dry out there. There's even some soybean fields getting harvested. I mean, not harvested the way we're talking about today, but a true harvest too. So, you know, things have gone quickly in this kind of
now,
heat.
We kind of, any numbers yet? It's probably early for any of those soybean numbers, but have you heard anything out there on the harvest when it does come to a traditional soybean harvest?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're at the very, very, there's just the most of earliest of fields I've got harvested for soybeans. And so it wouldn't be accurate anyways. There's only be a couple of fields. So I don't even have a good concept of what the corn numbers are yet. I mean, I have a general idea of what they were early on. But because it's still going on, I haven't really called around to figure out what that average is. So
sure. Well, we're hoping for some good numbers, I know, at least with that corn.
Yeah, so at least the corn might have helped this
probably
year.
Not the soybeans.
But not everything else. Yeah, exactly.
That leads us right into our topic here today. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about baling drought-stressed soybeans. So why are we talking about this?
Yes. And so a lot of farmers are, especially like around here in Coffeyville, and I mean, southern Montgomery, most of Labette, even into Cherokee and Crawford. I mean, a lot of the southern part, the very far southeast, it just has not rained. It has not rained for nearly 2 months. There's been a little bit here and there, but the soybean fields look terrible. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you're driving around looking at the double crop soybeans, and they haven't canopied yet. But if you look out there, most of them have already flowered, or at least trying to flower. I'm sure they're flowering, dropping blooms, flowering again. But they're not really forming pods because there's no water to do so. So a lot of farmers are wondering, what do I do with these? I mean, if it doesn't look like there's a rain in the forecast, and there really isn't, I mean, is there a possibility that, you know, I should be looking at something else with them? And the only thing you could really do, honestly, is bale them or graze them or do some other harvest method with them. But that kind of gets into a quagmire of other questions, honestly. And so the answer is maybe, but there's a number of things that we need to look at first before we can do that.
Sure. And I'm sure that one of the first questions is what's been sprayed on the field.
Exactly. And so really, you know, it's the number one question and it's the most complex question. So we need to look at the exact herbicide and the insect products that were used, not just the active ingredients, but the label on that product. And what does it say about specifically prohibiting using a treated crop for forage? Most of the time, the vast majority of herbicide products for soybeans will have some sort of restriction or have a no hay label on that product. And so we're kind of locked in there. Like, what do you do? It just says you cannot use it. So therefore, if you go ahead and hay that bale, you're violating the label. And so some labels specifically prohibit it. Some actually do have a drawback. But, you know, Enlist Duo, Liberty, a lot of dicamba formulations are very common soybean products. Almost all of those have a do not hay on the label. And so, you know, I will say, I need to emphasize this at the very beginning, is that the label is the law. And so, you know, I do not advocate to ever violate against the label, but my job is education and not regulation. So I'm not part of the KDA. So I'm not going to turn anybody in or anything like that. And so mostly my job is to help people understand what's on the label and, you know, how to do things safely, you know, no matter what it is that they're up to. And so even though this is why I'm going to talk about this next part, is that even though it's on the label, do not hay, a lot of the time it's actually not because of safety so much as they never tested it. They never intended for those soybeans to be used as forage. So the companies aren't going to spend the money and all the time seeing whether that was actually safe to use as forage. It's just, it was never tested. And so a lot of these chemicals technically could be safe. And it's the exact same chemicals that we use on our pastures. And now there's some, you can't say it just because it's absolutely safe in one crop doesn't mean it's absolutely safe in the other. It doesn't really work like that. But we can, in a way, use that as a guideline, even though, once again, you are violating the label. And I cannot advise anybody to do that. And so the restrictions, they can depend on rate, crop, residue tolerances, how the product was registered. There's a lot of things that we use on our pastures and alfalfa. It doesn't mean it can be baled, but it does mean that the safety could be there. But there are some herbicides, though, that we do use in our soybeans that there's no equivalence with our pastures or alfalfa. Let's say like glufosinate, Liberty Link beans. We don't use glufosinate in anything else, honestly. And so there are other places we might use it in crops, but we don't use it on pastures, we don't use it in alfalfa, we don't use it in forage crops, so we don't really know what the safety aspect of that is, honestly. So I can't give you any specifics or you know, substitution of any kind to do that with. Some other things to know, I mean, if the co-op sprayed it, the producer kind of needs to know what the product is, what the active ingredient, the application rate, and the date, of course. And of course, hiring somebody else that sprayed it, like a co-op that sprayed it, it doesn't remove the producer's responsibility for what happened on the crop. And so just because the co-op sprayed it doesn't mean that you can go ahead and bale it. I mean, you still have to follow the label of the law, you know, even if you weren't the one that actually sprayed it. So, you know, it is a complex question, and that is probably the most important one, honestly. What are you willing to do? And I, of course, if you do go ahead and violate the label, please do not sell it. I mean, if you do sell it, basically you're involving somebody else too. And there's a money part there too. And so that's a whole nother civil layer, honestly. So, you know, be careful with that. Make sure that you disclose it, whatever it is that you do. But I'm not advising anybody.
Yeah.
Once again.
But again, yeah, if you're going to do it, you're on your own.
Yes.
Sort of thing.
Yes. But if you're going to do it, you're on your own. But please at least follow the minimum leisure of safety when it comes to that. Understanding drawbacks, understanding, you know, what you can look at to assume levels of safety. You know, it's not a recommendation, but it is a possible way of viewing it.
So how do we know if there's even enough out there to bother with baling?
That's another thing, is that a lot of these fields probably aren't even worth baling at this point. I mean, some fields on the way I was driving over here, I mean, they're not but 6 inches tall, and the field is less than half covered. That's not going to make a lot of bales, honestly. But, you know, maybe there's nothing else to do, and I mean, there's no other use for it, honestly. So drought-stressed fields, they're going to vary tremendously. One field might have soybeans that are 6 inches tall, another that are a foot tall or better, and that's going to make a big difference. Something from Nebraska Extension said that 12-inch taller, they may soybeans, if they're almost fully canopied, I would say, probably about a ton or more of dry matter to the acre. So about 2 bales to the acre is what they would form. And that's pretty decent, honestly. I mean, if they were that tall, I mean, I think that would almost be worth haying. That's close to alfalfa, like a singular cutting. You know, 6-inch beans that are only 50% of the field, I mean, divide that in fourth. You might be talking about acre and a half to 2 acres per bale. And at that point, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot. So it just depends on what it is that you're going to do with it, your end use, and how much you actually need that for it to be worth it or not.
So can soybean hay actually be good feed?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, soybean forage, it's pretty close to alfalfa, honestly. And so the crude protein could be 14 to 21%. And, of course, at this point, because we've had very little breakdown of the straw, I mean, when you bale all that and rake it all up, you're going to be getting a lot of wheat straw in there, too. That can kind of balance it out. That wheat straw is mostly just carbon at this point. But, you know, you'll get a lot more biomass to balance with that protein. And there's a lot of other good stuff within that, the soybeans. And so they're, it's perfectly good feed. And so the total digestible nutrients, probably around 60%. Under good conditions, that's pretty high, honestly, for feed. And so the leaves contain most of the value, just like it is with alfalfa. And so you have to bale it like you do with alfalfa. Those leaves will, once they dry, they'll crackle right off if you try to rake that thing when it's dry. So if you have a good idea, if you've baled and raked, you have a good concept of what alfalfa does, use the exact same concepts. So there's some tricks to baling alfalfa where, you know, you want to rake it when the stems are tough, or maybe like the morning after it dries down, because the alfalfa will kind of like reabsorb some of the moisture from the air. It gets really tough for a little bit before it dries out again. So you use the exact same concepts, honestly, to keep those leaves on those soybeans. Otherwise, if the soybeans leaves crackle off, then you really got nothing. I mean, those stems have nothing in them.
Sure. So, James, how about we take a quick break? We're going to be back after the news, and we're going to talk some more soybeans as we continue. If folks do have to run and they have a question for you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me in the extension office. 620-724-8233 is the Girard office.
All right. More coming up here as we continue our Green Setup program on KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690, 10 minutes, coming up on 11 past 8 o'clock. We have James Coover, K-State Extension, with us as our Green Setup program continues. And James, we left off talking a little bit about soybeans on the baling side of things. And I know we just had a few more points we wanted to hit if folks do decide to go ahead and bale those soybeans.
Yes. And so before the break, you know, we had talked about making sure the herbicides work with it and all that. But also, of course, call your insurance agent first. I mean, that's the number one. I mean, you got to make sure that happens. Make sure that you're not going to mess yourself up there. It might need to be appraised and then, of course, released before you can hay it and graze it. A lot of insurance agents will be willing to work with you on that. And so does baling ever pencil out? I mean, you have to kind of look at what the cost is per bale. A lot of people don't realize, I mean, the net, the wrap, the tractor, all that, the gas. $30 to $40 per bale sometimes.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, really. Like any bale, that's what's inside of it. But of course, you're pulling off a lot of nutrients too. And so you're getting probably, you know, $15, $20 worth of phosphorus and potassium in a bale. And you're losing about $10 to $15 worth of nitrogen that could be left until the next year. You got to keep that in mind that you didn't put that nitrogen on, but still, it could be useful for the next corn crop. And so there is some money there. When it comes to the nutrients that you're pulling off the field as well. And so put that all into it in your calculation of whether it's going to be worth it or not. Of course, I mean, $20 for good alfalfa, I mean, quality level, that's pretty good, honestly. So it could be really worth it if you have enough to actually be worth baling. But, you know, so mostly the aspect, it really is a salvage operation, and it's terrible to think about the fact that we're going to have to bale our soybeans. But looking at a lot of those double crop soybeans, you know, they've got there ain't a whole lot there, honestly. And I'm afraid there ain't any rain in the forecast, so it's just what we got.
Right now, we've got the 6 to 10 day precipitation outlook. We do have, finally, a little chance.
Yeah,
but
I saw that. Yeah. Well, you never know. Yeah. Sometimes chances turn into something.
Yeah, but. So we'll see. But it's been a while since we've had that. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll keep an eye on it. Do appreciate, you know, we're making the best of a not great situation. But when it does come to soybeans, I know we wanted to talk a little bit about some of those uses here. Of course, we have the new soybean plant right here in Montgomery County. So where do you want to start with that?
Yeah, so continuing the conversation about soybeans, this will be like a little more general. Just talking about all the different things that we do with soybeans and soybean oils. So let me ask you, what has vegetable oil, car seats, shoes, and firefighting foam all have in common?
Is it soybeans?
There you go. Oh. It's all made with soybean oil. And so, soybean oil. And a lot of people would be surprised that we make a lot of things out of soybean oil. I mean, when you take that stuff and you break it down to the very most basic, you know, phenols and tiny little components of those poly things, and you stack them all together, you can create all sorts of stuff with it. And so, you know, renewable diesel, high performance oils, foams, automotive products, firefighting foam, all that stuff is now being used with a lot more soybean oil and soybean other products as well than it used to be. And so you take that, you break it down, and you can build almost like Legos into a huge number of different things. So I think a lot of people already know that we can turn soybean oil into biodiesel. I mean, something that we've been doing for a long time. And so that process, we called it transesterification. What we do is we add an alcohol, usually methanol, along with some sort of catalyst. And that catalyst is actually breaking those little chains apart. And that reaction turns it into biodiesel and glycerin. That glycerin is pulled off and used for other aspects. It is actually a food product too.
Oh, yeah.
But that biodiesel, you know, then it can be blended with petroleum diesel. So 5, 10, 20%, you know, in some cases you can get to 100% biodiesel. But of course, just kind of like ethanol, it's not a perfect replacement. I mean, you can mix it in there because our vehicles can handle it. But, you know, you can't just use 100% biodiesel because the timing of the engine isn't made for that. It burns a little bit differently. So, you know, we've been doing that for a while now, and it's a fairly easy process to do, and you can make it big really fast. Another thing that you can do is actually called renewable diesel. And so instead of biodiesel, renewable diesel, it sounds the same, but instead what we're doing is we're using soybean oil feedstock, and we're creating something almost exactly like diesel. It's literally a plug right into it. You can burn renewable diesel in any case that you can burn regular diesel, and almost to 100%, because chemically it's almost exactly identical. That process is very similar to what we do actually here in Coffeyville with the refractory towers and, you know, pulling it off at the different temperatures and that whole process of creating diesel. We just do it with soybean oil, and I don't fully understand all of that, but, you know, it's pretty much the same process.
You have to really love chemistry to know what all is going on. Yeah, over there.
It is really cool, and they get, you know, you boil that stuff and you pull it off at different temperatures, and you get all kinds of various weird phenols coming off of there, and we make all sorts of stuff with it.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, it is a possible and a very much bigger industry than it even was just a few years ago, honestly, of using this stuff. So
when we talk about like what they're doing, crushing in the Bartlett plant, right?
Yes.
So like, is that kind of like the first process in
yes,
all of this?
That's right. And so you take a soybean, you crush it like at the plant there, you got soybean meal, and then of course you have the oil as well. And so the soybean meal, for the most part, is still kind of a feed product. A lot of it gets actually shipped down to Mexico from here, and that's the reason why they got the one here in Cherryville, is because it's almost a direct line down south, and so it's one of the farthest crushers in the south. And so they ship that down for, you know, pig farms, cow farms, and other places. Some of it will actually get exported as well. But the oil part, you know, we use a lot of it. Some of it does get exported, but we also have a lot of industry here in the United States to use it.
So what about the soybean oil? There's a specific type here?
Yes. And so I want to talk about high oleic soybean oil. And so this is kind of a new one, and this is just for human feed. And so, I mean, human, you know, consumption. And so oil contains high oleic soybean oil, like it mentions, has a higher oleic acid rather than the linoleic portion to it, which is usually very high in soybean oils. And one of the things that you have with high oleic, it was more of discovered more than anything else, is that some soybean varieties or some family of the soybeans was creating a much higher oleic acid compound or percentage. And so it handles heat better, it lasts longer before it breaks down. And so frying oil, snack foods, baking, cooking sprays, even there's some sort of industrial aspects where you want an oil that's highly stable. And so these high oleic can really be useful in that aspect. It's resistant to oxidization, basically, because it has that higher oleic rather than linoleic. So, you know, some bioplastics and other things can be very useful to reduce that one component and increase the other one. It's actually similar to olive oil. And so it's taking soybean oil and making it chemically, at least within those components, similar to olive oil, you know, and it's actually a little bit healthier for you because of that aspect too.
So could someone grow those specific types, the high oleic, if they wanted to?
Yes. Yeah. And so it is a specific type of beans that we're growing. We don't really grow them around here. It's mostly kind of towards the Great Lakes area that they have these. All of these are contracted out by specific companies, you know, that they have a place to go with it before they start to grow it, pretty much. But, you know, the premiums on these are a little bit higher, 75 cents to a dollar higher per bushel on a lot of these high oleics. And, I mean, the production is still expanding, but, you know, it's an industry within an industry.
Sure.
So it's going to take some time.
A little bit of a niche there.
Yeah.
What about soy-based foams?
So I think it'll be a lot of surprised, but right now you're probably sitting on some soybeans. No matter where you are, you're probably sitting on some polyurethane foam that was partly made with some soybeans. And so car seats, you know, office seats, I mean, mattresses, pillowcases, couch cushions. I mean, really everything has a little bit of this, these soy-based products in it. And so when you break it all down, they still have some petroleum content to them. I don't really know the chemistry of all of it, but I don't think they can quite fully replace all the petroleum part to it. But roughly 5-20% can be some sort of renewable soybean oil. There are some specialized foams that can even be much higher than that, all the way up to 100%, honestly, on these specialized foams. And so, you know, you can use it for all sorts of things. One advantage is there's actually less gassing of the VOC emissions, and so there's less gassing off when it comes to that, because whenever you make a foam, it's going to have some sort of emission coming off of it. Actually, at the Polymer Research Center there in Pittsburgh, they work on a lot of this stuff. In fact, they're one of the original creators of these foams, and they have these chambers where they can monitor all this stuff. It's really cool place to check out. But yeah, right here in Southeast Kansas, we developed a lot of this cool stuff. And so, you know, when you break that stuff down, you can build it into a huge number of things. And a surprisingly, I mean, thousands of consumer products are made with these soybean foams. And that percentage is increasing over time, too. So we're getting away from petroleum products and we're starting to replace it with renewable soybeans.
Well, interesting. Well, another one that I know traditionally has been chemical based would be the firefighting foam, right?
Yes. Yeah. So this is kind of a new one, and it's really cool because we're actually using the soybean meal rather than the soybean oil. So we got lots of places to go with the soybean oil, but the meal, however, you know, we could easily use some more market aspects. Well, this was definitely something that needed to happen because old soybean foam had the PFASs, you know, the PFAS, the forever chemicals that they talk about. And, you know, they were not safe, to be honest with you. I mean, there are some places that they have, you know, firefighter trainings or whatever, and those PFAS are still around because they're going to be around for a long time. And firefighters, they even had a higher rate of these PFAS in their systems because they were working with this stuff. So what they've done over the years is actually they've created these soy foams, and it uses that meal, and it's completely replacing. They don't even use those PFAS anymore. They're pretty much just using this soybean meal foam stuff for firefighting instead. And so, of course, it's a lot safer to use for firefighters. I mean, it's a lot more biodegradable. You know, it isn't going to stick around in the environment. And this is not just laboratory research. I mean, firefighters, departments have really begun evaluating and using this product and adopting it into their own systems. And so in some of those demonstrations, I mean, they're doing that research right here in Kansas and starting to use it here too. So it's pretty nice to hear that we're taking some of these chemicals out, but we're also replacing that with something safe and something that we grow right here in Kansas.
Well, that's great. Well, it sounds like, you know, obviously there is a demand for, you know, soybeans will continue to be. I mean, it's kind of when you look at all the landscape of crops, it's got a lot of potential. We just need a little bit of rain to be able to grow it.
Right here in Southeast Kansas. I mean, yeah, the crusher is probably shipping in a lot more from north than they're planning to. But, you know, but when we get it here and we can do it, we have a lot of uses for this stuff, and that the industry is really growing. And so, I mean, you know, export markets aside, all the international stuff, that's kind of a quagmire, but we are developing markets here in the U.S. to use this stuff in really new and inventive ways.
Well, and you know, when you actually just look at the commodity prices, I mean, soybeans are, you know, they're quite a bit higher than other crops.
Yeah, they've been talking about rallies and all. I mean, the marketing guy at K-State has been talking about rallies. I don't really know where all that comes from, honestly. But yeah,
it's $12.74 a bushel right
now. Yeah, yeah. So really, the market's actually better than it was. And I know a big part of this actually is what we've been doing with this, largely through the renewable diesel is a huge piece to that. But there's some other places that they're starting to find new markets and places for these soybeans. The same thing is true with the ethanol industry, the corn industry, but I can talk about that later. So.
That's right. That's right. Well, something to maybe consider if you are planning next year's crops and everything. And so it is really, really interesting. I think that a lot of times we just take for granted everything around us and don't really think where it comes from. But this is, I think, eye-opening.
Yeah, it really is kind of cool.
Very good. Well, James, any other events or anything like that that the Wildcat District is planning that you want to highlight at all?
We do have some events, and I should have came with a list.
You should have.
Yes, I should have. And so I know the Southeast Center, we've got some beef day plans, and I don't know if they know specific dates yet, but there's a lot of stuff within the region. And so I will get back to you.
No, no worries. It sounds like a plan. Well, James, we always appreciate you coming on by. And a lot of good stuff happening out there. We just hope for some rain, and that'll just help everything out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, especially, you know, wheat planting is even all that far away, like a month away. So we got to get some moisture in the ground.
That's right. That is right. So we appreciate it, and we'll look forward to chatting again soon.
Yep, thank you so much.
James Cooper from K-State Extension here on our Green Setup program. We will have, of course, our conversation again next week at this time with guests from K-State Extension. On the way next, we have Open Line in just a few minutes. That's after Farm to Fork, our Words of Inspiration program, and more coming up. All right, now we have a check of weather on the way from News on 6.